very famous Fortnite streamer, one of the people that got their own skin in the game, where she tweeted that she's falling out of love with making content. And I think she then broke down a little bit after that. Let's just go into that because I'm already describing it anyway. Microsoft, you can wait. Your $10 billion deal can wait until the end of our podcast.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Gaming Careers Podcast. We have a lot to talk about today. The big news of the week is Twitch finally talked about their DMCA plans and their Tiger Team and the changes coming to the platform this week. We also have some updates on the YouTube side in terms of some copyright updates on their side, too. Ludwig, we joked about it last week, but actually is still streaming this week, so we're going to unpack some more of that this week. Twitch partners, we talked about them going ad-free. There are some changes to that already, so more changes on that side. Plus, Microsoft actually talking to Discord. We'll kind of unpack that in a bit. Co-streaming really blew up in the past week, so we'll touch on that a bit. Plus, some burnout side from creators. And then we'll kind of tie it off together with a viewer question at the end. So, lots to talk about this week. But, Pete, man, how's it going today? How are you?
Yeah, very well. Thanks, mate. Lots to unpack, you know. It's not every episode where we're talking again about a 24-hour stream that's still going since the last podcast that we talked about, but yeah, I'm all good, mate. How was your week?
Good, man. It's been lots happening at work, but all good stuff, all exciting stuff. So I'm excited to talk about this. I think the big news of the week is probably the DMCA stuff, although maybe it's not as big news as we had hoped when we saw the initial announcement. Do you want to talk about that real quick?
Yeah, so there was a live stream and sort of a blog post this week from Twitch kind of announcing their rollout of updates to help tackle DMCA. And I don't know, maybe if I was just a bit naive about the whole thing, but went in with high hopes to really hear about this new Tiger Team that they put together that were, you know, tackling DMCA one feature at a time. But it was it was a little bit underwhelming. And even the roadmap of things that they're hoping to do for the rest of the year is a little bit underwhelming. So, yeah, I did catch it. I actually caught the VOD rather than the live stream. How about you?
Yeah, I actually didn't see the live stream either. I just saw kind of a recap of it, but I saw the highlights. They sent out an email too, or maybe a couple emails to people about these notifications. And then you can go watch the full info. But basically, everything that got announced this week was a couple things. First of all, you'll actually get notifications on the site if you have a DMCA notification of some kind for a takedown or a strike. So you can check that out. I think it just links to the email for right now. Secondly, you can see your strikes that you've had so far in your dashboard, and you can unpublish or delete your VODs now. I think the unpublish was there for a bit, but now you can do it for multiple VODs at a time, which... The funny thing is this has been here for a while from community resources already for mass deletion tools. So it took them quite a bit of time to get this feature that we had like a week after this whole thing went down last year. But at least we have it, I guess. It's up to 20 VODs, I think, is what they said. And then lastly, you can now watch your unpublished VODs, which I didn't realize was a thing in the past. Apparently you could unpublish them, but then you had to download them to actually watch them yourself. So that's pretty much everything that I saw. Did I miss anything?
Yeah, I mean, that sums it up, really. They've added a notification, like a little number one up in the top right bar if you get an email anyway about a copyright infringement. And they now allow you to like select 20 VODs to unpublish or delete. And really, honestly, that is it. And they're like, they've structured a whole live stream around announcing their new features. And it's like exactly like you said, there were community tools to do this, probably released within about 48 hours of like the big DMCA news that came out probably, what, late last year, Q3 last year, something like that. So it's just so disappointing, isn't it, really, that this is all that they've managed to do. And they hyped up the live stream. They talked about the Tiger Team. They were talking as if Twitch was the greatest developer team in the world. And it was just really disappointing that the limited amount of things that they've been able to implement. But they did also release a roadmap. So when they said that, I was like, oh, yeah, so now we're going to get these tools that, you know, YouTube has where it's going you're going to be able to do all kinds of things, remove the music and all that kind of stuff. But really, honestly, the roadmap isn't even that exciting, I don't think. You know, but by the end of the year, we're hopefully going to be able to submit counter notifications if you believe that the copyright strike that you got was unfair and there wasn't actually copyrighted material in that content. You're going to be able to counter claim, I guess, as well as be able to like review the VODs and the actual DMCA timestamps from the creator dashboard. But this is, you know, we're talking about for the rest of the year. So it just seems super slow. I would have thought this was a much higher priority for Twitch and they would have more people working on it, but you know, it doesn't really look that exciting looking at the year ahead for DMCA on Twitch.
Yeah, I was also very excited when I saw the initial email come out because I didn't know it was coming, and then looking into it, I mean, I guess it's nice to have, I think the batch unpublished tool is maybe the nicest thing to come out of here, but everything else, like, we've already had in some capacity, and it really just involves deleting your content at the end of the day in some way, so that's not the best way that you should be giving tools to creators, I think. And like you said, there is a roadmap here with a couple things here through the rest of the year, but it seems like, you know, a counter notification is such a basic thing for DMCA. That really should already be a thing in the dashboard of some kind. I mean, YouTube's had that for how many years now? Since a decade, probably. So I hope that it comes sooner than that. We'll have to see. I think it's funny they kept calling it the Tiger Team, and I really wonder what that means. I think really that just means they pulled people from different parts of the org and made an unofficial DMCA team because they don't have an actual DMCA team. And then this is what they were able to do. So hopefully the Tiger Team can do more down the future. We'll have to see.
Yeah, and they also spent quite a bit of the live show talking about this separate audio truck that you can send from streaming software like OBS, which I think came out, well, at least it was in beta about 6 months ago. So it's been an option since Twitch Soundtrack came out. I feel like it was around that sort of time where you can effectively send two audio tracks to Twitch, and on your stream, both audio tracks are mixed. So you have one for your music and one for everything else stream audio. So your voice, your Discord, your game audio, desktop audio, all those kind of things. And then when it comes to your VOD, the music track that you've sent isn't included. So the idea behind that, I think, is if you want to have like music-free VODs, or you want to, you know, move things across to YouTube or something like that. But the fact that they're talking about this in a conversation about DMCA just it's not a fix, because you can still get DMCA strikes for live streaming the music. It's not just about having a VOD to prove that it's there. We've seen that the music industry are using tools to actually scan live streams live for copyright infringement. So it doesn't help solve the problem. And if anything, it's Twitch adding to the confusion for streamers, because they're kind of telling people, oh, you can just use this new feature that we've built. You know, if you're using streaming software like Twitch Studio or OBS Studio, you can stream two different tracks that get merged for your live stream and one gets taken out for your VODs. But like, that isn't a solution. That's just delaying the problem, really.
Exactly. I mean, it's kind of getting rid of the evidence, essentially, and hoping that no one will notice, which is a problem, because the lawsuits that Twitch had last year with these music industries, the things that they said, I remember, were quotes like, Twitch is not providing proper licenses and is kind of dodging the issue. And that is kind of what this feels like. Yes, you're taking care of the VODs, which are where most of your evidence is right now, but the issue fundamentally with your platform is still for the live actual content. And we have seen DMCAs happen on live streams even without the VOD being considered. So it's not going to get rid of the issue for sure with the multi-track audio. And hopefully there'll be more of, I know there's a lot of talk about them doing like a big licensing deal that way that YouTube or Facebook has done. And it almost feels like they're going to have to do something like that in the future, right? Because they've tried all these different efforts, but even by the end of this roadmap that we have in front of here, I don't see like a full resolution to DMCA with all these things coming, because live stream audio is still going to be a thing, and I don't see anything specific in the roadmap that's going to combat that or prevent people from having issues there. I don't know, is that, am I missing anything on my end?
No, I don't think so. I mean, they do have a harder problem to solve than YouTube does, because YouTube has worked out a system that seems to make the record labels happy, because they can claim all the monetization on a video that contains their copyrighted music or video. But you can't really take monetization out of a live stream, because it's just a portion, you know, it's just a small snippet of an 8-hour stream or something. So it's much, much harder for Twitch to kind of build something that I guess the audio companies are going to be happy with. And licensing seems like the obvious answer, but who knows how expensive that could be or how difficult a conversation that would have to be to have multiple different record labels agree to it. But whilst we're on the topic of DMCA, YouTube did release a update this week for people that are uploading content to YouTube. So not the streaming side, but the VOD side, where now during your upload cycle, so where you're inputting, you know, title, thumbnail, description, tags, if you want to, you also like state if it's for kids and if it has any like ad placement or anything like that in, there's another step now which actually checks your video content. So it has to happen after the video is finished uploading, but it checks for copyright infringement before you publish it live. So previously how this worked is you could publish your video live as soon as it had finished processing. And sometimes the checks for copyright infringement happen over the next sort of 6 hours. So you could release a video and then only find out, you know, 2 hours in when all your viewers are watching it, that it had a copyright claim on it and all that monetization was going somewhere else. And then, you know, you had to dispute it, but effectively you're losing money that whole time that you're disputing it. Whereas now that check is going to happen during the upload flow. So before you can publish it, which is great because not only does it prevent you hopefully from getting strikes on your channel for copyright that you maybe didn't know was going to be a problem, or, you know, there's plenty of legitimate times when it might flag up a copyright strike, but it's out of your control. Like if you were outside filming and you walked past a shop or something like that, like that is difficult. Now this will check for that before you publish. So you should be able to, you know, go back and edit that bit out of your video and then re-upload it, or use the YouTube editor even before you publish to cut bits out or mute audio or anything like that. So this is great that the check is coming before. It probably does mean that the upload cycle is going to be a little bit slower because you have to wait for that check to complete. And I'd presume that happens relatively quickly, but this, I think, launched last night, or I saw reports of it from last night. So I guess for this week's video upload for Gaming Careers, I'll time how long it takes. Who knows if like more subscribers gets a higher priority in the queue of the checking. I don't know, but I will certainly test it. But this is definitely a good change. It's going to help creators avoid strikes. And really the only downside is it might mean that you have to wait 5-10 minutes before you can publish a video that you've uploaded.
Right. But I feel like if you have the option to wait a couple extra minutes just to know that your video is basically guaranteed to have monetization and avoid this issue, it's worth it, in my opinion. So I agree. It's a super cool issue. I was looking through YouTube's official tweet about it, and it seems like some people were waiting for a long time, and maybe there's some issues still around people not having their checks run properly for copyright stuff. So I'm sure they're still working out some issues, but totally agree. It's good to have like a preemptive check before it goes out. This kind of reminds me, I know we talked about it's tough to compare it to live streaming sites, but on Facebook, I don't know if you've ever tested it, but what they'll actually do is if you have a copyright music song playing during your live stream, and it's actually listening to your stream as you stream, and it will tell you to take down, like stop, either change the music or it's going to end your stream essentially, which is pretty interesting. So
wow,
it
really? Kind
of preemptively warns you. Yeah, it's really, I hadn't seen it until recently, but it'll actually physically stop your stream if you don't change that song. So that seems like something that we could probably see on Twitch or YouTube in the future. I don't know exactly the tech behind how it's listening to all the songs or like where the library pulls from, but pretty interesting. And so I would love to see something like that on Twitch, so it's more preemptive of just warning you about this kind of thing instead of just making you delete stuff after the fact, essentially.
Well, YouTube can probably implement that relatively quickly, you would think, because they're already doing the content ID scanning on VOD content. So they just need to build a way to do that for live streams and then hopefully be able to warn you about things like that. But Twitch, I feel like Twitch is starting from scratch with all these features, aren't they, really? We would have loved for them to be planning for this because the writing was on the wall, like we've said so many times. But really, it seems like they've only in the last 6 months started to pull a team together, the Tiger team, to tackle all of this. But yeah, DMCA coming up once again, it's just going to be an ongoing issue. And clearly all these platforms are working to try and solve it in their own unique ways. That's really interesting about the Facebook stuff because I hadn't, you know, we've talked many times about the fact that we need to research Facebook and do some test streams to Facebook so we learn more about that, because there's plenty of audience members for the Gaming Careers channel that stream to Facebook, and I know that they've had some really great success with monetization and things like that there. But that is really cool that they're now, you know, trying to help creators by warning them about certain music that they're playing on stream. I think probably let's transition into talking about the never-ending stream. Somebody that would be getting countless notifications if they're streaming music, because they've now been streaming for I think 10 plus days at the time of recording this, so 11 days he will still be live tomorrow when this podcast actually goes live. We talked about last week Ludwig, who is doing the never ending stream. Well, it's just a subathon which encourages his viewers to subscribe or donate money, and by doing so, they're adding time to how long he has to stream for. So it started with every subscriber added 20 seconds to his timer. It's gone down now to every subscriber adds 10 seconds to his timer. But he has been live now for 10 concurrent days. At the time, we're recording this right now, he still has 49 hours left on his current timer. So even if nobody subscribes for the next 49 hours, he's going to be hitting 12 days. That's very unlikely to happen because people are continuing to subscribe to him just to see his timer go up. He's sleeping on stream. He's doing workouts on stream. He's going outdoors for walks to get some vitamin D in. He's cooking on stream. He's still playing games, still releasing YouTube content. It's just crazy to watch. I can't pretend that I've sat down and watched it for more than half an hour, but I have checked it at multiple times through the day to see what the number is at, see if he's awake, what he's doing. It's just crazy, isn't it, Ben? Like, what is going on this stream?
It's wild. I mean, same way. So I can't sit down and watch it consistently, but I find myself just checking back on this stream a couple times per day just to see what's happening, because it's crazy to just have a channel that's always on. I think because you never lose that momentum essentially with your stream, especially for this kind of thing that's such a big event.
It's like the Truman Show, but he knows that he's being broadcast.
Exactly. It's so for anyone who doesn't know the Truman Show, it's the concept of like someone who's always on and you can watch him from around the world, and it's his own little bubble. So it's super interesting to see every part of this guy's day for a week, and he's always on the camera. And again, we don't know how long this will go. I joked last week, hey, we might talk about this next week if he keeps going. And I honestly did not think we'd be talking about it, but here we are. He's still going. Maybe even next week still be going. Honestly, like the way that the sub counter has gone up in the time, it's possible, I think, that we could still be talking about it next week because it just keeps jumping. And now it's kind of, I think he was trending on Twitter a couple times, and he just hit, I think, the number one most subscribed streamer last night. So there's definitely that big mass, you know, hype for it culturally. And so I wouldn't be surprised if we're still going. I feel like he might even have to cut it off at some point, because what's going to happen is at some point, like the subs that started the train are going to have a new sub available. So theoretically, it could go indefinitely if it lasts a month or something. I don't know if he'll have to, you know, have a hard cut of his own, but super cool to watch. And I think, again, I talked about it last week, but it just kind of proves there's always something new you can do on Twitch. Now, again, not everyone can probably afford to do a 24/7 stream with their life, but, you know, it's something that's super easy in concept to do. So I think it just proves there's always more for people to try out on Twitch.
Yeah, in the last week, he's actually made some updates, like his new graphic for showing how many hours, minutes, and seconds he's got left has like a little rocket emoji and a graph, kind of like the GME emoji that you always saw everywhere, to show like it going down. And then as soon as someone subscribes, there's like a little bump as the timer updates to add 10 seconds on. I wonder if he's coded it, or whoever has coded it for him could maybe make sure that it only updates for new subscribers. And then he doesn't have the ongoing problem where if he goes to a month, everybody resubscribes and it adds to the timer because they're technically already a subscriber. So who knows? He might be able to code it in a way. People will eventually get bored of this. I've already seen like the narrative a little bit on the like Twitch subreddit comments, where before everyone was like, oh, this is so funny, keep it going. Where now they're like looking at how much money he's made. And I think there's some estimates that if he made it to a month, it would be over $1 million that he will have made. He's talked about like donating some to charity and paying his mods who like carry the stream overnight. So he's like sleeping, but he has his mods in Discord who are like chatting and watching all of the clips that are like being donated into. But yeah, it's a one-off. We're not talking about this is going to be an ongoing problem that we're going to see the top Twitch creators do just to grab money. It was a unique idea that has been well executed and well received, and who knows when it's going to stop. If it's still going next week, we'll give you an update on it for sure. He's going to need to find ways to keep content fresh. Like, you can't run out of content ideas if you're literally live whilst trying to think of the ideas. So hopefully he has enough things to do in the day when he's actually on stream, as well as his like 6-hour nighttime streams as well. But yeah, really interesting that that's still going on.
It's super interesting. And so we'll, like Pete said, we'll keep you guys updated for next week as well. Something else that we saw here. So we talked recently about how Twitch partners had basically gotten a ad-free perk as part of the partnership. Not anymore. That got reverted. We found out recently. Pete here is a partner. Do you want to talk about your experience with that?
Yeah, so I've started seeing ads again, and I'm not going to complain too much because I know the majority of people listening and watching this podcast will be seeing ads all the time on Twitch. But there was a partner perk for a bit that meant that you didn't see any ads. It keeps changing day by day, and I'm kind of just following Zach Bussey's tweet thread about this because he updates it every few days when he gets new information. The latest update is that ads will not be seen when a partner streamer is actively broadcasting. the goal is to make it easier for partners to find channels to raid. And I guess also if they're like co-streaming events. So that's the latest that I've seen anyway. I'm certainly still getting ads on Twitch, but can't complain too much. They're nowhere near as bad as they were like 3 or 4 months ago when you were getting like 7 ads back to back every time you joined a new stream. So yeah, that's the latest update, but not really huge news. I would say that that maybe transitions quite nicely into talking about the co-streaming that we saw this week, particularly for Valorant. There were some big North American Valorant finals, and Riot have, I think, allowed a lot of the big streamers to co-stream this event. So you can watch with your favorite creators. I know from the top of my head, like Shroud, Ninja, who are both big Valorant streamers, as well as I think Myth and Pokimane co-streamed this event. And then Slasher added up all the concurrent viewers for the finals through all of these co-streams, as well as through the official stream. And it peaked at over 300,000, which was, I think, probably record-breaking for the game Valorant anyway. So interesting discussion about co-streaming events. I think some companies hate it happening, and then some companies are maybe a little bit wiser to how much extra publicity this can give. Like if you're broadcasting a positive event and you can get these people to stream it for you, then that's amazing. It's basically like free publicity on their channel and their community.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things. Even so, Riot historically has had issues, I think, with co-streaming, so it's good to see that they're supporting it on the Valorant side. I know League is still a little bit in the works. I think there's this perception that if you let people co-stream the event, they'll go watch that person's channel instead of the official broadcast channel, and then that'll tank your viewership. But if you, I think what Valorant did and what Riot did is they officially supported these channels to say, hey, these are official co-streams, so go watch these guys. And so I think they can factor that into their overall viewership, which is important when you go talk to brands about, you know, we had this many viewers watch the World Finals, and so here's why you should advertise on Valorant or Riot. But I think this really kind of is the future, because people like to see the reactions of people that they know. And that's kind of, even like if you watch shoutcasters and personalities on these events, I think people get attached to certain ones that they like to see commentate the game or just have their own perspective. So it makes sense that you want to watch your favorite big streamer have the same kind of thing for the game, especially if it's like someone like Shroud, who really knows the game. And I think he probably had the biggest viewership there. And Myth too, kind of same thing. So I think we'll see more of this probably. And like Slasher was saying, I think it really will be the future of esports watching, especially with online being kind of the future of events too, and not doing so much in person. I think we saw some more, even with the Blizzard Activision stuff this week, of them having some layoffs and saying that online events will be more of the future for Overwatch League and probably more things. I think quarantine kind of proved that. So even more reasons that I think co-streams from these streamers will be kind of the bigger way to watch events in the future personally.
Yeah, I wonder if these companies are going to, you know, take data from the streams and use that to include those personalities in their like official LAN tournament broadcasts. You know, if you can see that Shroud is constantly pulling in 100,000 people when he's co-streaming a Valorant tournament, then do you get him as a guest for the Valorant World tournaments that are probably coming up in the next year, and actually bring him to the event and have him as an analyst or something on the desk, because you've used that data and seen that his audience really react well to that, and then you can give him a paid opportunity to actually, you know, be a part of the production. So I can see the reasoning behind it, and it'll be interesting to see, like you said, how this changes when the COVID world slowly returns back to normal. I know that Riot in particular are still going ahead with in-person events. They have both the League of Legends mid-season invitational, which is sort of their halfway through the year tournament, as well as like the Valorant first global tournament, where I think there's like 8 or 10 or 12 teams being invited from all around the world, both happening in Iceland at some point throughout this year. So they're still going to do the whole bringing everyone together, quarantining, probably playing from separate locations with all the COVID testing and all that kind of stuff. But they've done it before. They did it with Worlds last year. So they clearly know how to follow the protocol. The only thing that's missing is the fan base in a stadium. But still, to be able to have that zero ping advantage to have a real fair tournament at a LAN setting, I think is really interesting. So we'll see what Riot decides to do. If they bring, you know, maybe they'll fly Shroud out for the first Valorant tournament over in Iceland.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised, honestly, if they do that. And I think we will see kind of more of a blend of online and in-person events, because I know people miss the in-person stuff. I definitely do, with the big stadiums and crowds and everything, but the viewership on these online only events has been pretty great compared to even the in-person stuff in the past. I think Like last World's League Finals was probably the biggest, if I remember correctly, even over the last few years with all the huge stadiums and everything. And if you're the people putting that event together, it's hard to look at the budgets for those two things of having a full rented out stadium and everything that goes into that versus just online and not know that like you made a lot more profit probably on the remote one than the in-person one with everyone else there. So I think we'll see more of that transition. I think in-person is still very important, but it'd be kind of interesting to watch how that changes and then how, you know, YouTube and Twitch and everything else plays into that when it's mostly online and bringing those personalities in. So let's keep an eye on that and see what happens later this year for sure.
What do you want to cover next then? Do you want to do the two bits of news we've got left to cover, I think, before we jump into the viewer question is either the Microsoft looking into buying Discord for $10 billion. Yeah. Or we've got the tweet that went kind of viral this week from Loserfruit, who's a very famous Fortnite streamer, one of the people that got their own skin in the game, where she tweeted that she's falling out of love with making content. And I think she then broke down a little bit after that. Let's just go into that because I'm already describing it anyway. Microsoft, you can wait. Your $10 billion deal can wait until the end of our podcast. So, yeah, Loserfruit. Did you see this tweet? Why, maybe explain a little bit to everybody listening about why this went viral.
Sure, yeah. So I don't think Pete or I really follow Loserfruit too closely, but this seemed to go a little bit viral over the past week. She basically just tweeted out something really simple. She said, "I'm falling out of love with making content, broken heart emoji." And then there was a small thread after that, just giving some context on kind of why she was thinking that. And it seemed like it was more sort of a spur of the moment thing, not like she planned to make a whole thing about it. But basically talked about how she's been doing it for so long. And the quotes were, "I feel like I should do something different, provide something to the world, but I have no idea what," which that was a really interesting quote to me. This gnawing feeling that I should do something different. I think maybe there's this perception on her end that like she's not doing something valuable in content creation. I think there was a lot of pushback from people on that in the comments, which was interesting. But I could see if you've been in content creation full time for that long, maybe you kind of want to try something different or want to try something that's more of a traditional job even in that sense. So just super interesting. And I think she said she's not going to take a break or anything, even though there was a lot of people saying that she should do that to kind of get a refresh. And just interesting to see a really big creator, you know, who's gotten a lot of big milestones, like people's opinions of, you know, a Fortnite skin and partnership and full time and also a big female creator who, you know, more of those are just nice in this space and role models for people. So pretty interesting to see her perspective on that and the comments. I think it was pretty good feedback all around from people of just saying like, you know, we support you and everyone kind of goes through that. There were some other creators saying they felt the same, but it kind of comes and goes with content creation. Did you have thoughts on this, Pete?
Yeah, I think that there's two interesting bits to this. Firstly, a lot of smaller creators have the thought process that if you get to that size, you know, where partner streamer holding thousands of viewers, making loads of money, you know, sponsored by companies like Gymshark, has a skin in Fortnite, like everything just must be so great. But content creation really isn't that different to any other job. Like there's bad bits and there's good bits and there's repetitive bits that eventually get old. And, you know, maybe just taking a 30-day break isn't going to actually change that. And she really emphasized that she wants to do something to provide more value to the world. And like you said, loads of responses from that, people saying that, you know, they helped, you know, me get through this, get through that, just watching your fun content, like you are providing value to the world. But it was interesting. I think it was interesting just how many people were talking about this openly. And I've been a content creator now, I guess, officially on the gaming career side for probably 4 years, but I certainly made YouTube content before that. And back then when it was strictly just a hobby, that's when it's super fun, isn't it? And then when it becomes a job and there's bits of it that you don't like to do that become repetitive, then you can see why some people do fall out of love, but then they've also, you know, really beaten the odds and become successful in that really hard to grow niche. So yeah, interesting dilemma. I'm definitely going to follow what she ends up doing. She said that she's just going to continue doing stuff because she would go mad if she didn't do anything all day, but maybe she needs to find something to, you know, break up her content creation cycle and live streaming cycle that can still make her feel fulfilled at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the big thing that she kept talking about, was wanting to do something that would kind of provide value to the world, provide something to the world, is her quote that she had there, which I think that's like the fundamental thing as a content creator, right? You're always trying to provide some sort of value to people at the end of the day with whatever you're doing. And I think if you've been in, you know, Fortnite for so long or just gaming, maybe it can be hard to see the value you're giving people at once you kind of, you know, as you mature. I think even like for myself, looking back over 5 years, like once you're in gaming for so long, you kind of have to remind yourself like what the value is a little bit. But I think there really is still a lot of value in gaming for what it can do for people. So I'm sure she'll kind of find it. And I think having a discussion about this is good, just to open up and have, you know, some discussions from people who are going through the same thing in the content side. So definitely be following this, and hopefully she'll get back into it and feel pretty motivated again soon. The last thing we have is Microsoft and Discord. So this, I think, just came out last night, I believe, from what we saw. There is a rumor or some sort of discussion about Microsoft looking to buy Discord for over $10 billion, which is huge. What did you see about this, Pete? What'd you find on it?
Yeah, I think it's probably quite a strong rumor now. Like there's enough official blogs that have talked about this, like Bloomberg has written an article about it. So I don't think this is just a rumor anymore. There's clearly some discussion behind closed doors that Discord is looking to either go public or to have some kind of acquisition. And Microsoft seems to be leading that. I mean, $10 billion valuation, it just becomes a number, doesn't it? Like, I don't know if that's a good deal for Microsoft or not. Discord is obviously amazing, and it's really grown in the streamer side of things. And I think probably through quarantine, I'd imagine it's seen the same kind of growth that Twitch has, and they built a lot of tools to be able to video chat with your mates and share gameplay screens and stuff like that and join all these communities. So there's probably a lot of inherent value. I saw like a lot of people saying like, no, this is going to be the end of Discord. I'm not sure. I don't think of Microsoft anymore as like the big evil corporation, because they have acquired a few companies in the past few years. The nerdy one that comes to my head is like GitHub, which is like open source Git repository where you can submit code. It's where a lot of open source projects live. And they've kind of just let them to do what they want to do. And even with Mixer, they didn't... I know Mixer ended up dying, but how much I put that down to Microsoft making bad decisions, I don't know. They made a lot of good decisions. Now you can argue, should they have spent so much money getting Ninja and Shroud on platform? But that's not going to be the downfall at the end of the day. They were definitely the biggest competitor to Twitch and YouTube back then. So I don't know necessarily if... I think I'd prefer Microsoft to be the ones that end up buying Discord than Amazon. And then we'd just be like Twitch would just merge with Discord and you wouldn't be able to type the word YouTube into Discord. It would just delete your message if Amazon was the ending up buying. But at the end of the day, I've been surprised that Discord's lasted so long with a pretty much completely free product. I know they have Nitro and things like that, but how big it's become and how successful it's been without being acquired or going public.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack with this. I think, first of all, we talked, I think last year, about how Discord had a $7 billion valuation as of December from their last investing round. So the number seems about right, going a little over, you know, $3 billion over the valuation. But still, I think there's a lot to think about with Discord, though, because when you look about, you know, obviously Mixer, I think, is maybe the biggest comparison for Microsoft for buying a gaming community kind of thing. But the difference is that Discord doesn't really have a direct competitor, as far as I know. There's things like Guilded and, you know, Teams or whatever else. But like, you know, Mixer was a direct competitor to Twitch, essentially, right? It was trying to compete with Twitch and overtake Twitch, essentially. Whereas Discord is kind of the de facto platform of its type. So I don't think it's really... You know, Microsoft isn't going to have to pump a bunch of money and support into Discord to overtake somebody. It's already kind of there, which is pretty interesting. The other thing is that community is really important. As someone who works in a community area for a brand, I will tell you, like, community is really getting important for a lot of areas. Look at even like the esports teams with like Liquid Plus and things like that that are starting to happen now. So it makes sense that Microsoft wants to get into this area. And Discord, honestly, when you look at communities, I can't really think of a bigger community than Discord besides like Twitch maybe or something like that, but it's different than Twitch, right? So I think Discord is super valuable. Now, again, we don't know if they'll actually go through and be bought by Microsoft and make that offer, you know, accepted, or if they'll just go public. I feel like public kind of makes more sense for them personally because they are in such a good spot with competition, but we'll have to see, I guess. It's a lot of money to pass up on the other hand.
Yeah, I mean... When you say there's no competitors, I would almost just look at the direct competitor in terms of a program sense. I know the audience isn't the same, but if we look at Slack, Slack and Discord are essentially the same tool. Slack has just been built for companies, you know, professionals to use internally as a company to kind of replace email, and Discord has been built for gamers, and kind of similar to Twitch has grown outside of the gaming space, and now a lot of YouTube creators use it for their community management, and like you said, a lot of esports teams and things like that are starting to use it. But they are competitors, and I know Slack is like definitely gone down the business route, like really hard with all the integrations with APIs of mailing lists and all those kind of things that you can really build it as a tool to use as your company. And I wonder if Discord maybe eventually tries to chase that. That would be, I think, my worst case scenario is if Microsoft bought it and tried to make Microsoft Teams in Discord, and then I don't know, that it would just be if they try and force Discord to be something that it isn't, you know, because I know that they bought Skype, didn't they? And Skype was like the de facto chat service that your grandparents used when you needed to call them until the pandemic. And then all of a sudden Zoom came out, and everyone that was working at Skype was probably like, what the hell? You already used us. What can Zoom do that we couldn't do? But yeah, they've lost a lot of market share there. So maybe Microsoft is thinking about Microsoft Teams and trying to take a little bit more of that Slack market by buying Discord. I don't know. I'm just literally thinking out loud here.
No, that's fair. I mean, I think if Microsoft were to acquire them and they wanted to just really keep growing Discord and grow and grow and grow and grow, then it does make sense to hit non-gaming audiences. But I don't know. I know Slack is similar to the concept of Discord, but the audiences are so different. I mean, no one who's using Discord is going to go use Teams for the same purposes and vice versa, right? Versus Twitch and Mixer are very much the same audiences, right? So that was a direct competitor with that sense. Like, if you buy Discord as Microsoft, that's this whole new market of people that you can, unfortunately, advertise to and bring into Microsoft IDs and things like that. So I think it wouldn't be so much a direct competitor in that sense, but there definitely is the concern that, you know, they do branch out beyond gaming, and then there's advertising maybe and whatever else that comes with that. So I get that concern there for sure, because Discord is pretty amazing as it is.
Yeah, Microsoft, they have a number of different directions they could go with this. There's also the Xbox path. Like, Microsoft also owns Xbox, right? So who knows if we start to see Discord ability on Xbox chat services, and that's how you're going to be able to voice chat with your mates and party chat. And if they bring all of this together, who knows if it even goes through. You know, we're only at the stage where there's apparently an offer on the table, but by next week it could be accepted, or it could take another year for it to all to go through. But I think we all echo Microsoft, if you do buy Discord, don't ruin it, because we all really like it right now. It's one of the few programs that I have very few complaints about. So yeah, please don't ruin it. But I think that's probably pretty much it, apart from the viewer question, which I think came from somebody on your side. So why don't you read it out for us?
Yeah, so this came from my side. I'll grab the name in just 1 second. So the question for this podcast was, I see a lot of streamers with dual PC setups currently. With the release of the 3000 series cards and how good CPUs are getting core and thread-wise, what are Pete's and your own view on single versus dual PC setups? Do you think it's better to put all your money into a high-end PC, or split into two low to mid-range PCs right now? So really good question. That's a bit more advanced here. Pete, you want to give your thoughts on this one first?
Yeah. This is something that I think, as time goes on, the reason for needing a dual PC stream setup is going to become less and less. Like, as we get, exactly as this person has said, as we get better GPUs that have the NVENC encoder and AMD's version, if that ever becomes competitive, built into the chip to take the workload off your CPU, or as CPUs continue to get higher core and thread counts. I mean, I think most people that are single PC streaming now should just be buying an NVIDIA GPU and using NVENC, because like the quality is so comparable and it's way less work on your computer, and then your CPU can be freed up for the game. And this NVENC chip shouldn't even really impact the graphics card and the graphics performance of the game as well. So as time moves on, the argument from dual PC to single PC, I think, shifts in favor of single PC. But you'll still see many, many top streamers running dual PC setups. Like, certainly all the ones that really care about 240 frames per second, you know, really high refresh rates and things like that, will still want a dedicated PC for gaming and a dedicated PC for streaming. I think nowadays, to answer like that end question, do you think it's better to put all of your money into a high-end PC or split two mid-range PCs? I think it's better to put all your money into a high-end PC, just personally, because if you had two mid-range PCs and all the jobs that you need to do now as a streamer, because you're a content creator, you actually need to be like editing content, making thumbnails, you know, rendering graphics and managing your whole business. I would much rather have a high-end PC that will increase my render times, decrease my render times, than have like some mid-range PC and another mid-range PC that's doing nothing whilst I'm doing all the content creation. So in my opinion, this is shifting towards single PCs as new hardware comes out. I think there's still an argument right now for a dual PC setup, but it's way more niche than people think. There's too many people that are super small streamers seeing Shroud running a dual PC setup and end up spending $4,000 on two separate systems just because they think that's going to be the difference that makes them popular. Whereas nowadays you can absolutely get away with streaming in NVENC by just buying an NVIDIA GPU and, you know, still being able to maintain pretty healthy frame rates. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Ben?
So it's my turn to agree with you this week.
Oh, no.
To get more divisive opinions. Yeah. But you totally took my answer. I think, again, with how good 3K cards are getting and everything else, and just really at the games people are streaming these days, like Valorant and things like that, I think dumping into one PC makes a lot more sense. Plus, like you said, if you are looking to do extra content creation with rendering videos and maybe anything else on the side that is intensive, it's better to have one really good PC than two kind of decent ones, maybe, for that kind of thing, just to speed up rendering times and help you to be able to process multiple things at once. So I definitely would go that way, unless you have like some really specific scenario where you need two PCs. Maybe it's like some really intensive FPS game and you're concerned about some encoding. But honestly, like, just for future-proofing, it's hard not to recommend putting it into the higher-range stuff because you can always repurpose that stuff down the road too. So
one thing I will mention is if you're in a bit of a unique situation where you have a PC that's starting to become a bit outdated and you're going to buy a new PC and you're thinking about repurposing the old one as a streaming PC because you don't need a really good graphics card. You can run it on the X264 encoder because it's doing literally nothing else other than encoding the stream. So as long as you have a decent CPU on the streaming PC, then you just really need to purchase the capture card. That's something I think that sometimes is worth exploring. But the difficulty with dual PC streaming, I actually think, comes with the setup, the complexity of the setup, especially the audio. We've got products like the Go XLR, which have tried to simplify it, but it's still not simple. When you're trying to get like your game audio into your headphones and your teammates' audio into your headphones, and then your microphone back to your teammates, but your microphone also to your stream and your game audio to your stream, like, it becomes complicated and it's not an easy thing to solve. And that's why there's plenty of guides out on YouTube that try and detail it as much as possible. But things are just going to be a lot simpler with a single PC streaming. And If right now, where we are now in March 2021, it's already very feasible to run a high quality single PC stream with where NVENC is, then just look in 1 year's time, 2 years time. Like, it's always going to be moving in that direction, especially as NVIDIA is like so aware of how big streaming is. And hopefully AMD is also aware and keep working on their encoder as well. As well as like Intel, you know, Intel are building their QuickSync encoder as well. So I think it's moving towards single PC streaming. Do you want to have you managed to grab this person's name for the great question so we can give him a shout out?
Yeah, this is from MC Spriggan. So thank you for the question, man. I appreciate that a lot. And if you guys have your own questions, make sure you drop us. This one was on Twitter, so thanks for that, MC. But you can also drop them in the YouTube comments or Instagram or Discord, wherever. We always look for this stuff ahead of time. So just let us know and we'll pop it onto the question list next time.
Yeah, I think that probably does it this week, Ben. So best of luck for the upcoming week. I know you've got some interviews with professional players coming up. So I'll help you write a few questions if you need, you know, the pro. I'm a pro gamer as well. So I've got the aim if you want any questions about warm-up routines or anything like that.
Fellow pro gamer.
Yeah, exactly. yeah, thanks so much for listening, for watching. I think we mentioned last week that we're looking into live streaming this podcast. Things are moving in the right direction there. It's probably not going to be next week, but in the next couple of weeks, I think we're going to start experimenting with live streaming this podcast. So stay tuned on our social medias where we'll be announcing that, and make sure you can join in on the live chat. But other than that, yeah, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you in the next episode. Peace.
See ya.